Thanks for listening to the History Buff podcast with your resident history buff and Berlin tour guide, Arty. If you're enjoying the podcast, then you can really, really help us by liking and sharing the episodes on social media and rating the podcast on your streaming platform. If you'd like to see more History Buff content, then please give us a follow on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for your support. So, hello guys, and welcome back to another co-hosted discussion episode of The History Buff. Today, I am joined by Mercedes, a fellow history buff and also a fellow tour guide. Now, some of you might know I am currently traveling in South America and I am currently in Buenos Aires. And I have literally just come from a fabulous tour with Mercedes, who joins me now. Welcome, Mercedes.
Thank you. Welcome, Archie, to our country.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. It's a wonderful country. And yeah, today we're going to talk about something that really fascinates me and has also fascinated me since the first time I came to Argentina in 2016. And that is the story of Eva Perón, otherwise known as Evita, someone who rose from humble beginnings as a small town girl to become first lady, winning the hearts of many Argentines, but also making lots of enemies in the process, before dying of cancer at the age of just 33. So, Evita, to her supporters, I would say people who don't like her probably wouldn't call her that.
Nowadays, supporters and no supporters, they call her Evita. But at the time she was alive, some people, they were not liking her, were calling her some bad names.
Yes.
Or maybe something like whore or something like
exactly.
That. And instead of Evita.
And this is the thing. So basically, me as an outsider, as a foreigner, we, I think, have this view of Evita, I think mostly coming from the musical by Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, that she was this sort of universally well-loved figure in Argentina. And I have to say, I was quite shocked when I came here in 2016 to find out that that is certainly not the case.
No.
It is really, couldn't be further from the truth. And what actually is the case is actually about half of the country despise her. There doesn't yes. really seem to be a sort of middle ground.
Yes, she appeared in a moment in the war that many things were changing. And the changes she was bringing with Perón were very, very hard to be taken by some level of society and some people. And so they were not accepting her because of her background.
Well, because she was a woman.
And she was a woman, yes.
Yeah, and it, you hit the nail on the head there. It was this time where, you know, it was post-war. Well, when she was in power, everything was sort of changing. And, you know, she was up against this very kind of machista system.
Yes.
And yeah, it's a fascinating story. So basically, there are sort of two kind of narratives of Eva Perón in Argentina. The first is by her admirers and supporters of, you know, a loving, caring woman who fought for women's rights, you know, who did it for the rights of the poor, the humble.
She gave her life for them.
So the saint, basically,
yes.
who gave her life for them, who did it for the poor, the sick, and the humble. And then the other narrative of her, which is that of the whore actress who did it for fame,
for
money,
power.
And power.
Yes.
And this kind of broadly, I think, really encapsulates the sort of, well, doesn't encapsulate the current, the divides in Argentina today, but it sort of is emblematic of it, of the divides in
yes.
Argentina.
Yes, because at that moment, it was like disruptive.
Yeah.
It was a disruption to have a woman saying that kind of things, supported by her husband, who was a president, and he was also a military, and giving a lot of importance to poor people, humble people, workers, that they were not included in society.
Yeah.
So it was very, very disruptive for many, many minds and many people. And it was the beginning of a huge ditch in the 20th century. Because we, along our history, we still have differences. And we are on one side or in the other side, not in the middle.
Exactly. And that's something that has really, really become a lot more sort of entrenched with social media. There's no, people don't see the nuance in things. The thing is, people are either totally for, you're either totally with me or totally against me.
Yes.
And people don't realize that there is actually a lot of nuance. And that's hopefully what we're going to discuss today. So, well, let's get started by introducing her life. So Maria Eva Duarte was born on the 7th of May, 1919, in the rural town of Los Toldos, okay, in Buenos Aires province, which I believe is about 200 kilometers.
Yes, it's 200 kilometers more or less west from the city of Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place that was a very poor area. And there were a lot of original people living in that area because that land was being taken by the rich estancieros for cattle mostly.
Right.
So she was living in there. She was the natural daughter of the owner of land. He was having two families, the official one and the non-official.
Exactly. So Juan Duarte, who was an estanciero. Estanciero. So yes, he was a wealthy farmer. And yes, he had an official family. And then he had a mistress with whom he also had a family. Now, the mistress was called Juana Ibarguren. And with her, Juan Duarte had five children? So it was Eva was the youngest.
Yes.
But then you also had Blanca, Elisa, Juan, and Erminda.
Yes.
So Eva was born outside marriage.
Yes.
So illegitimate. And in growing up in Los Toldos, I think they all knew that that she was illegitimate, right?
Yes. Yes. And at that time, it was in the birth certificate that they were natural kids.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yes.
And so
Perón himself was a natural kid.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
That's something that may have influence and in them both.
Okay, so he was also illegitimate.
Yes.
Oh, okay, right. So obviously nowadays this doesn't matter so much, but obviously back then it was a big deal. And so basically, they are a poor family. Well, obviously, supported by Juan, but they are this sort of second family. And Juana is a seamstress. So the children are very well dressed. And so they actually don't, and she actually raises them very well.
Yes.
Raises them to have, you know, very good manners and to be, you know, is that right?
Yes. They were all going to school, although Eva, she has...
she wasn't a very good student,
no,
was she?
No, she wasn't.
No.
Mostly in math, she didn't like that. But they were very well educated, the five of them. That was a time where there was always a school near, and everybody in our country, even they were poor, they were attending school.
Right. So she has a decent childhood. Up until the age of 7, when her father is then killed in a car accident.
Yes.
Suddenly dies in a car accident. And the family, the Juana takes the children to Juan's funeral.
Yes.
And they are actually refused entry.
Yes.
And this humiliation is something that stayed with Evita for the rest of her life. And I mean, I can imagine it would have been very... because she had a good relationship with her.
Yes,
yes.
It's something that maybe it was pointed by all the people that she was a natural kid to this father. And We don't know for sure which were her feelings, because she was very little, not being allowed to the funeral, or the sense of loss she had, because they have to move. They have to leave Los Toldos because they were not having any more support from the father. So Juana, she had to make her life and her kids by working at some point.
And that's when they moved to Junin.
Yes, to Junin, yeah, that is a bigger town mm-hmm. than Los Toldos, and where she went back to school and returned her life. But it was a point losing her father
yes.
in her life.
Yeah, it was a very formative experience for her, something that she never forgot.
Yes.
So they moved to Junin, and so Juana, now on her own, has to bring up the children on her own, and she gets a job as a seamstress. But as I say, she, you know, still dresses the children well, sends them to school. Now, it's in Junin that Eva starts going to the cinema.
Yes.
And she's watching all of these films, I believe, Argentine, but also foreign films as well.
Yes, yes. We were having in here not only films from outside, but we were making our own. Mm-hmm. It was something that was beginning. And mostly she loved to read poems.
Right. That and later was, she liked to write poetry, didn't she?
Yes, yeah. But she was very, very fond of reading poems and getting disguised with different stuff, and at school in different moments, like small concerts. We have to have in mind that we are speaking about the beginning of the 20th century.
Exactly, yeah.
And so many things that we are seeing now, in a way, they were not happening because there were no technology, and a lot of things were not yet discovered. The radio is something that came in our lives in 1920.
Exactly. Yes, it was a very, very different time. Now, she obviously through this, you know, gets a bit of a fancy for acting. And she starts acting in school plays at 11. And yes, so she has this interest in acting. And then she meets a famous tango singer called Agustín Magaldi.
Magaldi, yeah.
Now, this is when she was 15.
15, yes.
Yeah. And she basically seduces him, or he seduces her.
Oh, yes.
There are competing versions of
this. Yes, we are not sure of that. The thing is that she finished school, mm-hmm. primary school, and she was bored. That was she saying that she was bored of the city. Well, she was bored of the town where she was living, of the life she was having.
Because Junin was still quite small, right?
Yes, it is a small town nowadays, and she wanted to be an actress, and the opportunities were in Buenos Aires.
Mm.
So she came to Buenos Aires. There are different versions about...
Quite a few different versions.
Yes,
so one that she came with Magaldi.
Yes.
And this is the one that is portrayed in the film Evita.
Yes.
And she basically abandons him the day after they get there.
Yes.
Then the other one is that she comes with her mother, which I think is the most generally accepted one.
Yes.
And but obviously this all plays into the mystery about
yes,
her.
Yes, because some of the versions, they say that she arrived in here by car with Magaldi.
Mm-hmm.
There is a movie, it has like 30 years old, that is about young Eva, and she's arriving into Retiro. That's one of our railway stations, and she's arriving alone.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know for sure. Maybe the right version is the one that she arrived in here with her mother.
Yeah, or sister.
Or maybe the brother. But we
Juancito.
Know, yes, that Juancito, he moved here. That wasn't immediately, because he was the one that was supporting the family in Junin. He was the one that was working. And so we don't know for sure who were in here in the beginning with her.
Exactly. I mean, I guess the way that she got to Buenos Aires is really immaterial.
Yes.
At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is that she came here.
Yes.
So she comes at the very young age of 15.
Yes.
And she comes, as you say, to try and make it as an actress.
Yes.
So she starts off life, obviously, living in pensions, as they're
called.
So basically boarding houses.
Yes.
Living pretty Spartan life. And she starts auditioning for theater roles.
Yes,
right?
Yes. She got her first opportunity with an important company. Then the head of that company was Eva Franco, that was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And she began to have small parts in different plays, and she began to work mostly in radio.
Right.
At that time.
And that's what she found she was good at.
Yes, yes. At that time,
had a nice voice.
She had a nice voice, and all this poetry reading she used to do when she was little was very helpful. And at that time, the shows were very, very important because there was no television.
Exactly.
So families, they were gathering surrounding the radio.
And yeah, radio soap operas are huge, right?
Yes.
Because yeah, this was really the time in Argentina in the mid-30s when radio exploded in Argentina.
Yes.
And with that came the rise of the soap opera, the radio soap opera. And that is where Eva got her big break. And she obtains a fair amount of success.
Yes.
And so she is well into the radio scene, does theater. She also does dabble in film, but it's widely reported that she wasn't very good.
Yes, no, she assumed that in...
Oh, so she knew that herself.
Yes, yes. She wrote that she was really bad.
Right.
At the movies. She was more or less at the theater, but she was really good at the radio.
Right, yes, yeah, yeah. So very good at the radio. So basically, yeah, she becomes by the end of the 1930s pretty established on the radio scene. And the thing is, in order to get to where she was, she did have to, should we say, she did have to have certain, what's the word?
Concessions?
She had to have certain relations with men in positions of power. But the thing is, people who don't like Eva point to this as evidence that she was a whore actress. But this is just what women actresses had to do back then.
Yes.
Marilyn Monroe did it.
Yes, first, before Eva, here we were having the wife of the president. It was a Democratic president, Marcelo Torquato de Alvear. He married an opera singer, and Regina Pacini. And she wasn't accepted by the society because she was an opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
She was rejected. That was the society that was not only here, but mostly around the world, where there were different classes and they were not accepting things that they
exactly.
were happening. It's like it was an official life and a hidden life.
Which is funny because Argentina is a new world country, but it still did have this almost class system where you have this kind of upper class oligarchs, as Evita would like to call them, who basically thought of themselves as the aristocracy.
Yes, they felt like royals.
Yes,
themselves.
Exactly, because they had a lot of influence from Europe. You know, they brought over polo, you know, all of these very kind of European things, also horse racing.
Yes, and also it was the time when, at least in our country, we began the democracy periods and the revolution periods.
Mm-hmm.
And the army was very, very important. It was like a new class, like an aristocratic class.
Mm.
And as they were not very sure of themselves, mostly the wives, they were not accepting that other kind of people that were the actors and actresses.
And the wives liked to gossip.
Yes.
They liked to living room gossip. And this is really where lots of, I think, the myths and legends of Evita came from was the living rooms of these rich women.
Yes, yes.
But we're here today to try and dispel some of those myths. So, yeah, Evita, she makes a name for herself on the radio, also modeling as well. She did a lot of modeling in magazines and what have you. Now, by the 40s, she actually starts to get quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
She buys her own place, and we actually went there, not into the actual flat, but to the building today where she bought her first flat, and which was where? Where was it?
That is in Posada Street. And as most of the things with Eva, we have two versions.
Yes.
Of the place. In one of the places, we nowadays have a nice hotel, and the other one is just a building.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, some people, they said, we don't know for sure, that she got a kind of sponsor. And this sponsor was Domingo Mercante. He was a military like Perón, and he was a very good friend of Perón. They made most of the career together.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both those who were having the ideas that Perón was taking into practice while he was the Minister of Labor at the government that was at that moment. And this man, Mercante, he helped Eva.
Mm-hmm.
In a special moment. She needed some money because her brother, Juan Ciro, he was accused of some stuff, some debts and things. And so we don't know for sure if she was living in there because this man helped her or she had...
And she would have been living with him?
Yes, mostly.
Right.
Yes.
You said that this building that's now a hotel,
yes,
was where, yeah, powerful military men had their mistresses.
Yes, yes, most of the militaries.
And that, but the thing is that that's probably why Eva has this narrative of her being a whore actress, because she lived in this,
yes,
partly because she lived in this building. So
yes.
I think, to be honest, Evita was just a victim of circumstance more than anything else.
Yes,
really.
Yes. She was living in that area because she had the radio in front of the street, the radio where she was working.
Right.
And she was living in the neighborhood of the oligarchs.
Yes, exactly. Which is quite interesting, really.
Yes.
But I think, to be honest, there was an element of her wanting to sort of prove that she could do it. Because, you know, she had suffered a lot of indignities in,
yes,
her life. Obviously, the most major was being refused entry to her father's funeral. I think,
yes,
that was definitely the thing that affected her the most for her whole life. But also things like when she was starting out acting in Buenos Aires, she told her fellow actors that she'd had to sell some jewelry that she'd been sent by a lover in Junin. And they laughed at her because of jewelry, hers having to sell jewelry, but also jewelry that had been sent from Junin,
yeah,
to Buenos Aires. So these kinds of indignities. And also she had a relationship with an actor. I think this was still when she was starting out. She had a relationship with an actor and lived with him for 6 months. And then he just up and left because he wanted to be with someone more respectable.
Ghosting.
Yes, pretty much. Exactly. Yeah, the 1930s version of ghosting. And so so these, I think, humiliations,
yes,
I think, built up and made her want to, I think, prove that she could make something of herself.
Yes, and there were also some actresses that were accused of humiliating her. I think it is nowadays to get a place in every place that are many people applying to that position. You have to move yourself. So some methods are not the right ones.
Exactly.
And she suffered for the humiliations of some actresses.
Mm.
And
she did what she had to do.
Yes.
And but the thing that's, you know, that's so unjust about it is that women back then did what they had to do, but they were at the same time labeled whores for it.
Yes, but we nowadays we have that you can see in Instagram, in anyone, the haters.
Yes.
Are mostly women, and it's about the other's body and everything. Women, we are mean. Yes, sometimes we are mean, and that's something that Eva suffered a lot.
Yes, I think she definitely, she was known to be quite sort of abrasive, and she, if she didn't like you, she didn't like you.
Yes.
And you would know that she didn't like you. But actually, we'll come on to more about that when we get into her life as First Lady. But before we get to that, we need to talk about how she would eventually become First Lady. And that is, I guess you could say the most pivotal event really was that on the 15th of January, 1944, you had an earthquake that devastated the city of San Juan.
San Juan, yes.
Which is in...
It's straight from Buenos Aires to the west.
Right.
Like 1,300 kilometers.
Right.
It's up Mendoza.
Okay.
It's by the Andes.
Okay. So the earthquake itself only lasted 30 seconds, but it actually claimed between 7,000 and 10,000 lives.
Yes.
We don't know exactly how many, but so pretty devastating. Injured 20,000 people and reduced more than 13,000 homes to rubble. So after this, the Argentine government basically decides it needs to raise funds for repairing the city, rebuilding the lives of the citizens there. So they have a fundraiser. And so at this fundraiser, you have obviously famous celebrities. And by this point in the mid-1940s, Eva is, I think, what you would call a fairly successful celebrity.
Yes.
She was well known mostly because of her radio, her soap opera, radio soap opera career. So she's invited along with other celebrities, but also you have political personalities as well. And one of those personalities is the most popular minister in the government, whose name is Colonel Juan Domingo Perón, who is then the Secretary of Labor and Social Welfare.
Yes. Okay.
So basically, he was responsible for organizing the aid of the victims, and he called for solidarity festivals, and that's where you have these fundraisers. So the largest one was at, so it actually wasn't just one fundraiser, it's actually multiple.
Yes, well, many.
And the largest of these took place in Luna Park Stadium in Buenos Aires on the 22nd of January. And this was the big night, obviously. So this is when Eva met the colonel.
Yes, that's the place where they met. We know for sure that they were seated side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And Perón said that she was the one who got more money.
Mm-hmm. Than him.
It is from the people, because they were the actresses were, and the collectors were having a box where they were asking people to put the money in. And there's a version from a TV show, Santa Evita.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a book by Tomás Eloy Martínez that says that Eva, she knew that Perón was attending this festival, and so she tried to connect with him, and they connect, really.
Mm-hmm.
Some people or some versions said that they left together and they never got separated until one event happened in 45. But this is the place where they met for the first time.
Right.
And the beginning of a new life forever.
Yes. And we, again, this is part of the whole myth with Evita, that there's just so many things that no one actually really knows what happened, but it is reported that they left together.
Yes.
That they left the event together. So she, I think, is absolutely smitten with him. And so because of her role in aiding San Juan, Perón actually proposed to Evita to actually join the secretariat. Now, quite confusing, secretariat.
Secretaria
is like a ministry, but not quite. It's like just below.
It depends. It's below.
Yes.
But sometimes the people that they got that position, they have the same assignments as a minister.
Right.
So this secretary, sometimes it depends on the government, it turns into a ministry.
Right.
But what they have to do is just the same.
Oh, okay.
With one name or the other, it's just the same.
Right, okay.
Nowadays, we have less ministries, but until December 10th, we were having more.
Yeah. And it's funny, Perón could see from the beginning that Evita was a very intelligent woman. She had her head screwed on the right way. She knew, you know, she was very astute. And he actually said, so she got involved in that. Just as she was a fit for San Juan, she was a fit for everything else.
Yes.
We became closer too. We started working well together because she was very capable. And he concluded saying she was an extraordinary woman. So yes. He was obviously very impressed by her. So Juan Perón himself, he is quite a bit older than Evita. He was born on 8th of October, 1895. So that meant that he was
near 50.
But yes. And so he was
a widower.
He was a widower, wasn't he?
Yes.
His first wife was Aurelia. Yes. So in 1929, he had married Aurelia Gabriela Tizón, and she had died from uterine cancer.
Yes.
Which is something that we're obviously going to be coming back to. And so basically they meet, they get on very well, and he's a lot older, but that isn't really obviously a problem in that time. So he was 48 at the time. So he would have been over 20 years older than Eva.
Yes.
But this was obviously not a problem back then. This was very common. And so they get on very well, and they obviously start sleeping together, they start dating, but he keeps it secret at first, doesn't he?
Yes.
And but then eventually in 1945, after a year of seeing each other, they tie the knot, they get married.
And before they got married, it happened October 17, 1945. That was the first moment they were separated, because as Perón was making a lot of reforms of laws, mostly
the labor. Yeah.
Yes, mostly giving more power to unions and giving more rights to workers. The people from the army, mostly, that they were surrounding Perón, they didn't like that.
Yes.
Corporations, they didn't like that, because they need to give more money and more holidays for workers and many other rights workers were not having. So they make a kind of a small revolution, because it's not a revolution. They were not taking a president out, but they removed Perón from his secretary and
arrested him.
Yes, arrested him.
Because he was basically becoming too popular.
Yes, too popular, and giving many new rights to the workers.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was something that the society...
Oligarchs.
The oligarchs and...
And the military class.
They were not accepting that this all the people we all need the same rights.
Exactly. And Perón, I think... I'm being a little cynical here. I think he could just tell that it was definitely going to be a vote winner. He definitely had one eye on the ballot box. He knew that he was an astute politician.
Yes.
Okay, let's call it how it is. He was an astute politician, and he knew that this was going to be popular.
Yes.
So he is arrested on the 15th of October by the military government, because it is a military government by that point in Argentina. And the thing is, as we've said before, he was the most popular minister in the government, and he's introducing all these reforms that are very popular with the working class. And basically, the working class don't like the fact that he gets arrested, because he is essentially their face for the government, because the government is a military government and they don't really communicate with the public. They put out, the way they communicated was by putting out communiques. Okay, but he was very present, he was very affable, he was very charming, he was very sort of, you know, people liked him. you know.
He established very good relationship with some secretaries of the unions, with the CGT, Confederación General mm-hmm. del Trabajo. Mm-hmm. That's the place where all the union secretaries, they have their meetings. He was very close to these people because he was in charge of the relationship between the workers, the unions, and the government.
Yes, exactly. And obviously, yeah, and as you said, this kind of upset his military colleagues. But he went into the military fairly young, I think. He went in 1911, and he graduated as a lieutenant in 1914 and sort of served in various posts.
Yes.
And during these early years, he participated in military missions.
Yes.
And he demonstrated organizational skill. He was a very good organizer. That's what he was best at. And he actually went to Europe. I think he was stationed in Italy.
In Italy, yes.
Where he really came to admire Mussolini.
Yes.
Mussolini. And also he goes to see German regiments, see them training, and he comes to really admire the German army.
Yes, yes.
And this is, I think, where he has these accusations leveled of him as of being a Nazi.
Yes.
And obviously the whole granting visas to Nazis didn't help. But basically, I think this kind of really gave the image of him, you know, being, you know, a Nazi and sort of a horrible person. And then there were those who said that he was charming and lovely to wear. But I think probably in reality, he was probably somewhere in between.
Yes. I remember the Perón I saw when I was 12, 13 years old at the time he returned before he died. And he was a charming man. Mm-hmm. He was 77 years old, but he was charming. It was a surprise for me. I remember that because the image I had, it was like Perón, a hard man. Right. And it was like a grandpa.
Yes.
But although he was, at that time, I was seeing him as an old man because mm-hmm. I was a child. But he was very, very clever. He mm-hmm. was clever.
He was an astute politician.
Yes.
He was a great organizer.
Yes.
And obviously his star was really rising. The military government didn't like this. So that is why they then took action and arrested him on the 15th of October. Now, this really distresses Eva.
Yes.
She's really fallen for him and has become very dependent on him.
Yes.
And she's very distressed. However, events quickly sort of spiral out of control for the government. And there is essentially, I guess the union calls a general strike, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, a huge demonstration, the biggest until the moment mm-hmm. at Plaza de Mayo. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people in there. Eva had not a big participation in this calling
because,
the people.
Because I think she actually started the rumor that she was the one that organized it. Or maybe it was just her supporters that said that.
We don't know for sure because she was known, but she wasn't the wife of Perón at that time. She was just the girlfriend. And Perón was very close to the unions.
Yes.
So this power of getting all this amount of people into Plaza de Mayo, until that moment, it was only held by the unions,
yes.
not by her.
So basically turns into a sort of popular revolt. So the people, the unions, and the people calling for Perón's release.
Yes.
And the government is losing control of the situation, so they have no choice but to release Perón. And yeah, they haven't married by this point, but they marry 5 days later.
Yes.
So on the 22nd of October. Now, the 17th of October is really a sort of, I guess you could say, biblical date in Peronist circles. It's really, I guess you could say, the date. And they celebrate it every year, don't they?
Yes. Not so much in the last years.
Okay.
Yes, this last year. And the October 18th, they call it in here call it San Perón because it's like the on 17 they are celebrating this historical day of the demonstration, and the 18th is a not working day because they have to recover.
Oh, okay. Right.
That's why they call San Perón. But in the last years, all this stuff related with Peronismo has less importance for us here in Argentina. But the myth of Eva remains.
Right.
So Perón is getting out of the picture slowly.
Exactly. And this is the thing that's fascinating to me is that obviously Peronism is named after Perón.
Yes.
And he was actually the one in power. But definitely Evita and the myth, the myths surrounding Evita have definitely overtaken it. And she is definitely by far the more interesting person, you know, and she was definitely, I think, the friendly face of what, yes, of the government that would come. So basically he is released by the government and they call a presidential election for February 1946. So Eva throws her whole weight behind Perón and goes out to campaign for him. And this is really her political awakening. Awakening. She really realizes that she enjoys it. She likes campaigning. She likes making speeches.
Yes, and mostly until that date, the wives of the presidents, they had no importance. They were exactly just like a figure.
It wasn't a defined role, really.
Yes,
was it? Yeah.
Yes. And she began to move in politics. And I think Perón realized that she was a very important part of his government. So he...
Even though she wasn't actually part of it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But the charisma Eva had was so amazing for a lot of people.
Definitely.
That Perón was who he was because of her.
Exactly. And the thing is, people also say, you know, she was just a whore actress who wanted money, fame, power, whatever. And this was just another acting gig for her. But I mean, I think, to be honest, she probably almost in a way did think of it as an acting gig. But that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
And she used it for good purposes, which we'll discuss in a minute.
But I think it both were apart. I think in the beginning, maybe it was something that she liked, as she was an actress, to be in public. And then it turned into a way of life.
Mm. Exactly. And so, again, this kind of circumstance, but yes, she grew with it.
Yes.
She grew with it.
Yes.
And so he wins the February 1946 election, becoming president. And so then Eva Perón becomes first lady. So basically they base their whole ideology, Peronismo, around advocating for the working class, for, as they call them, the descamisados,
yes,
the shirtless ones.
And the social justice.
Yeah, is it for social justice, exactly. And the thing is, the term descamisados, which is what Evita repeatedly liked to refer to, her love for her descamisados and everything, was actually originally, I think, a derogatory term. But then they then turned it into a badge of pride,
yes,
I believe. So
because that was a time, and young people in here, they would not believe that people, even though they were very poor, they were wearing suits with ties.
Yeah.
And they were attending football matches and everything with, maybe it was the only suit they were having, but it was a suit with a tie.
Yes.
And Perón and Evita, by calling them descamisados, they were opening the all the
they
the
were connecting, yes, exactly,
and taking out the jackets, and they were workers with no suits on them.
Yeah.
That was a change.
Yes. And as we said, I think it's speaks to, I think Evita definitely used her talents as an actress to be able to connect emotionally. But I think it's also partly because women, I think, have a better talent at connecting emotionally.
Yes.
And I think that's what she was very good at. And Eva emerged as a very charismatic and passionate figure on the stage in front of an enthusiastic crowd because she actually spoke that,
yes,
day in front of this crowd in Plaza de Mayo. And her speech resonated very strongly among everyone present, and she sort of channeled this popular fervor in support of her fiance, well,
her husband.
Her husband. And she really emphasized the importance of workers in Argentine society and advocated for labor and rights and social justice, which would obviously become the foundation, kind of cornerstones of yes. Peronism. And so her speech on the 17th of October, it kind of really showed her ability. It was kind of a mark of what was to come. It sort of really showed her ability to mobilize the masses, articulate their aspirations. She was very in tune with them.
Yes.
And so this is a bit of her speech. I want to speak on behalf of the humble, on behalf of the descamisados, on behalf of those who suffer, those who cry, those who have no bread.
Yes.
What does it matter if they call me black? What does it matter if they call me Indian? What does it matter if they call me white? The hour of the people has come. Social justice is not begging. Social justice is a right that all Argentine workers will conquer and that all Argentine workers will maintain forever and ever. I will lead you to the final victory. Do not abandon me. Know that this humble people have their hearts ready for love and hatred, and they also have strong hands for the fight. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds like a presidential speech.
Yes, yes, it is. And it's the beginning. Then when she achieved a lot of things related with all these humble people, the descamisados, cabecitas negras, because the crisis of the 30s, a lot of people from, not from Buenos Aires, but the surroundings or some other places in Argentina, they were arriving into Buenos Aires searching for jobs and new opportunities. And as they were not blonde, they were having black hair. They were called cabecitas negras.
And I'm guessing they were discriminated against.
Yes, and right. That's why she said about the negros and everything, because it was like humiliating these people by telling these words to them. But then she, with the years, she changes into the woman's rights.
Yes, exactly. So Perón is elected in 1946. And yeah, he managed to consolidate his power with the support of labor unions, the church, yes. and the armed forces. Okay, so basically sort of manages to corral the kind of whole country, I guess you could say, apart from the oligarchs behind him.
Yes.
So he has all of the essential pillars of the state behind yes. him. Okay, so he's ready for a solid 6 years in power in order to implement Peronism. That's how long a term was, right? 6 years.
Yes.
So the Peronist economy benefited from favorable conditions, enabling the implementation of distributive policies, nationalizations, and social welfare measures. And we'll come on to that in just a second. But so during their time in power, the Perons championed causes like, yeah, as we said, workers' rights, but also healthcare and women's suffrage.
Yes.
So in 1947, Eva brings forth a bill giving women the right to vote.
Yes. She was supported by some congressmen, and that was a new beginning, because we were having no rights for many, many things. And we got that right. And in 49, they performed, because Eva was pushing on that also, a reform on the Constitution, where women, we were having the same rights as men, mostly about marriage and having the custody of kids and everything. And those rights were taken with right. the revolution mm-hmm. of Perón, but she was pushing for the rights of women. And I think that most of the work, the social work she made when she began to work with the foundations, was inspired in her mother.
Yes, Doña Juana, yeah.
Because she lived that. Her mother had to support a family being just a woman with no husband to support her. And so that's part of the work the foundation was making, was teaching women how to support their families by having new knowledge like sewing, cooking, or different stuff. And that's very, very important for us women. That's something that Eva gave us.
Exactly. And Yeah, but it's a tangible way that she changed life for women, giving them these basic rights, yes, like voting. So it's important to stress, though, that Eva never had an actual official position.
Yes.
So, but it is quite easy to see that she did have a lot of political power. And a lot of historians criticize her.
Yes.
Because they see it as a kind of pursuit of power and wealth. And obviously this fits into their sort of anti-Peronist narrative, claiming that she sort of exploited her position as First Lady for personal gain. Now, I mean, obviously, there might be a little bit of truth in that. I mean, you know, she did, once she was First Lady, you know, lead a fairly extravagant life. She wore tailored suits, you know, and all of this kind of stuff. And she liked, you know, expensive jewelry and yes, all of that kind of stuff. So she wasn't really exactly practicing what she preached.
Yes, but at some point, she was the wife of a president.
Exactly. And she had to look presidential. Yes. But the thing is, though, people, I think, when they think of Evita, they think, yes, oh, she was president. But actually, no, she wasn't. She was actually the wife of a president. But I think, to be honest, she had almost more political influence than he did. Well, she certainly had a lot of political influence over him.
Yes. It was like a perfect machine.
Yes.
They were having,
well-oiled machine.
Yes. Yes, because Perón without Eva was nothing, and Eva without Perón was nothing. It was the right couple just in the right moment.
Symbiosis.
Yes, it is. There were happening things that people at that time, they didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, you have to be a member of the party for working. Maybe there were women in charge of a block that they were telling what you were doing, if you were talking not so good about Perón. That kind of stuff wasn't something pro-Eva. And so all the enemies she got, they were using that after her.
Yes.
But we all women, we love to wear nice clothes and jewelry. And the thing is that with the ages and the time, many people, they put words in Eva's mouth, yes, she never said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think this is the thing is where, you know, you get away from reality and you start to go into kind of not morbid fantasy, but yeah, mythical.
Yes, it's like your memories are changed inside of you.
But you know why? It's because people interpret history in different ways,
yes,
and remember it, yes, in different ways.
And
that's how these myths come about.
Yes, and at some point, something that maybe it's not real, it turns into real.
And it becomes people's reality.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yes.
So, but anyway, that I think is probably safe to say one of her proudest achievements is getting women the vote, which becomes law on the 9th of September 1947, and also becomes known as law number 13,010, but also known as the Evita law. So that grants all women in Argentina the right to vote, gives them a pretty sort of fundamental vote. I think Eva knows, though, that she, again, like Perón before her, she has one eye on the ballot box. She knows that giving the right to vote to these women, basically, she's doing it to basically ensure that Perón stays in power.
Yes.
That not saying that that was the only reason, but I think it was definitely something that she knew she would be able to benefit from.
Yes, and in the elections for the second presidency of Perón, most of the votes were for women.
Yes, exactly. I think almost over half it was.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yes.
That was definitely one of her most proudest achievements.
Yes.
And she throws herself back into her work. Okay. So she gets an office at the Secretary of Labor and she starts receiving delegations. Well, not delegations. She actually just allows
groups of people.
Yes.
They were making lines and asking her for different kind of help. It may be a pair of shoes, maybe a house, medical attention.
Exactly.
Anything, and she was receiving these people in person.
In person, exactly. And she was really giving, and this is why I think people loved Evita so much, is because she gave it that personal touch.
Yes.
You know, no president or minister would usually do that. And the thing is, it's important to stress, she was not a minister. However, she was basically a minister in all but name. She was essentially Minister for Labour and Health, but she just didn't have the title.
Yes.
There was an official minister, but she was really the one pulling the strings in the Secretary of Labour, and also for Health as well. But this is the thing, is that she saw people in person, and I think that's why people are really so fond of her, because she took the time to talk to people. She found out what their needs were.
Yes, and that's why a lot of people, they love her, and a lot of people, they hate her.
Mm-hmm. Because it was clientelism.
Yes, and also it's like a kind of heritage that if my grandmother got the first pair of shoes from her, I have to be a peronista because of that.
Exactly. So yes, it was clientelism. So it was basically saying, if I scratch your back, you scratch my back. So if I give you this pair of shoes, make sure you, it's coming with love, but make sure you vote Perón.
Yes, and the enemies, they were saying that this foundation or her, they were giving only one shoe. So after the vote, you were got the second shoe.
Yes.
Yes, just for assuring that you were voting them or doing what they were asking.
Yeah, so this was a big part of, I think, anti-Peronist sentiment, was that she was doling out these favors in order to get votes for her husband. And you know what? There might be a kernel of truth in that. But, you know, at the end of the day, the things that she was doing were good things.
Yes, if we put in a line the good things and the bad things, she made a lot of good things. Maybe a lot of people, they didn't like the way, and they didn't like sometimes to be exposed in what was happening really in our country, that nobody still happens. Nobody was taking care of the poor, of the orphans.
Exactly.
And the old people.
And that's those were the people that she kind of was living to serve. And, you know, she was working very hard. You know, she sometimes worked 22-hour days.
Yes.
You know, she slept very little. Like, she rose early, went to bed. She would often come back home and Juan would be leaving for work.
Yes.
So she really worked very hard. She was very gracious and loving to people who came to see her at the Ministry of Labour. Now, she also was known to be very tactile. And she didn't care if someone was deformed or was ill. She would hug them, kiss them, no matter what.
Yes.
And there was an instance where a woman with leprosy came to see her at the Ministry of Labour. And she was talking to her, talking about giving her help and whatever. And the woman hugged her, and Evita hugged her back. And the security guard said, "Stand back." To the woman, and Evita slapped the security guard and said, "Don't you dare, I'm going to hug my descamisados," all of this kind of stuff. So I think that actually does show a real sort of genuineness in her affection for the people that she was helping.
Yes, yes, but she had this charisma. For some people, it was like disgusting to see her, because there was no reason in hating her. Mm-hmm. no really reason. Maybe she was human, as we were saying, and she did some things in the right way and some things in not a so right way, but most of the work she was trying to do was a good work.
Yes.
We don't know if she was anxious for power. I don't think so.
I think it was because she was very abrasive. She was difficult to work with if she didn't like you.
Yes.
And as we said before, if she didn't like you, you knew she didn't like you.
Yes.
Okay. And she made a lot of enemies.
Yes.
But the thing is, she didn't care that she made enemies.
Yes.
And she actually, I think, to be honest, wanted to make enemies, specifically of the people she considered enemies, like the oligarchs. And her real One moment of sort of sweet revenge for Eva came when she set up the Eva Perón Foundation in 1947. Yes. Because basically it was customary that the First Lady of Argentina would be invited by the upper class women who yes. had a charitable organization. I can't remember what it was called.
Beneficence, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yes. beneficiary.
Yes. It was an old society for the 19th century.
Yes, exactly. And it would be, and it was convention that the First Lady would chair it.
Yes.
But upon becoming First Lady, another humiliation, they didn't invite Evita to become
a part of that.
Yes. So that was, again, this kind of humiliation. But to be honest, I actually don't think she would have taken it. I actually don't think she would have taken it.
No.
Because it was with these upper class women who she had nothing in common with.
Yes, and they made just the same with Regina Pacini, the previous president's wife. These high class women, they thought they were different. And it was also the military's wives that they were making this, because it is said here in Argentina that the wives of the militaries, they have one more ribbon than their husbands.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they rule yes. everything. And they were not accepting her, just not because she was cabecita negra, as they were saying, but because she was an actress.
Mm.
That's the reason, because she was an actress.
Yes, exactly. And I think that was the source of a lot of people's kind of sort of premeditated ideas about
yes,
her.
We have here in our country an actress that she's 97 and she's still on television performing lunch with people on Saturdays nights. It's a supper. But originally, she was having lunch and people eating at her show. And she had a twin sister, and they were just a little couple of years after Eva. And one of them, she married a military, and she abandoned the career. They were the twin sisters, mm-hmm. and she abandoned the career because she married a military.
Right.
That's the way things were happening here. And I don't know in other parts of the world, but being an artist was
looked down upon.
Yes,
it was looked down upon, definitely.
Yes.
So basically she is humiliated, but she decides to take matter into her own hands, and she sets up the Eva Perón Foundation.
Yes. Okay,
so she, and this basically makes the charity that's run by these upper class women defunct, makes it obsolete, and it sort of dissolves into nothingness. Yes. Doesn't it? So she gets her own back, and she has, because she obviously has the whole machinery of the state yes. behind her. She goes to various ministries, to various unions, to various people for
and
money.
And she also got in touch with very well-prepared people.
Yes.
So the help she had was a very good one.
Yeah.
And what she did was amazing at one point, for helping kids for having their camps at summers. She made hotels in nice places where people they can go to
affordable hotels.
Yes, yes.
No, but, and also, you know, she built homes. She built entire neighborhoods.
Yes.
But the thing is, again, with this, what I think people found seedy about it, she built all of these homes. And yes. yeah, as you say, all like summer camps for
yes.
poor people,
Chapat Malal,
for poor children. Yeah, yes. all of this kind of stuff. But she actually never kept financial records, which a lot of people thought was quite seedy. But also, it was, I guess you could say, an exercise in clientelism as well, because she would always say, "This was done by Perón. This is all in Perón's
yes.
name."
When you go to a country with a lot of places with the name of a person, streets, buildings, and everything, and that person is not the national hero that declared independence or something, that is populism.
Exactly. And so, and this is the thing, right? So Peronismo, I think most people would assume is left wing. Most people assume it's left wing because it's, you know, it's for the workers, it's for all of this kind of stuff. But I think in reality, it had elements of both right and left.
Yes. If you ask me a definition of peronismo, I would say that it is a bag full of cats.
Right.
And cats are all different. You are going to see colors and sizes and everything. And if you get your hand inside of the bag, you are going to get scratches.
That's yes, right. I think that's a great analogy.
Because peronismo is not after, they have ideas or maybe a motto, but it's like a feeling. It's not rational.
And that's the thing. And that is why I think Evita was so much more important to Peronism than the namesake, Juan Perón, because she was the one who connected to the emotions of the people.
Yes.
And that is why I think, yeah, as you say, it's definitely more about the emotion.
And politicians nowadays that they call themselves peronistas, they are not peronistas, but they call themselves.
Because they want to be associated.
Yes, they want to be associated and they use Eva Perón's image.
Exactly.
And why nowadays her vault is the more visited in the cemetery, and I think one of the most visited places in the world.
Yeah.
And most of the people, they do not ask where Perón is. Yeah. Perón is abandoned in the cemetery, 70 kilometers far from here. Nobody's taking care of his vault.
Yes.
And so Eva is the myth. Eva is still living in our lives. Yes.
And she's definitely overtaken she's definitely become the dominant sort of legacy of Peronism and that time. And the thing is, you know, certain people accuse Perón's time in president as being a sort of elected dictatorship, because you would have, you know, kids at school with photographs of Perón and Evita. And it would say, the kids would be forced to say, Evita and my mother and Evita.
Yes.
Evita loves me. Yes. Da, 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 all of this kind of stuff. And that is the kind of thing that you see, you know, that's the same thing that happened in Nazi Germany with Hitler.
Yes. But sometimes I don't know if the leaders like Eva, they are aware of what is happening down them, what people is doing in their names.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the surroundings of these leaders are those who are making these movements or beginning to make this. But this happens all around the world. Mm-hmm. It has happened
building a cult of personality.
It's like we need to worship someone.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, she did it very well. And it turns out that, you know, I guess you could say to a large extent it worked, because she was very good at connecting to people's emotions.
Yes.
And I think that definitely came from she definitely had a lot of those skills from being an actress and knowing how to kind of connect to people's emotions. But the thing that's then annoying is that that's what people accuse her of being, you know, this whore actress who only wanted fame and money and power. So, you know, it's almost like you can't win.
Yes, it's hard to understand her life in one point of view. You have
nuanced. We need it. There is nuance, and people need to remember that obviously, you know, with all history, there's nuance. There it isn't just one narrative or another. There is nuance.
Many. Yeah, that is a part of populism. They're not thinking of leaving the power.
Right.
Not thinking that you as a president, at that time it was a 6-year period, they were thinking as them in the power forever.
Yes.
That's part of populism.
Yes, exactly.
Because in here at that time there were no re-elections, so the time in the presidency it was only 6 years. But they were thinking about, they changed the constitution for having the re-election in 1952.
Yeah.
So that's part of why a lot of people, they don't like Eva or Perón or both.
Yes.
Because they change some things in their benefit.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. And this, I think, really fed into this kind of image of them as being quite sort of despotic and not despotic, but as in, you know, almost legitimizing the claims of being a dictator, being dictators.
Yes, and also nepotism, because they were getting the family in everything.
Yes, because her brother Juan was Perón's secretary.
Yes, he was. And
So in January 1950, she fainted, and her doctor, who I believe was the education minister.
Yes. Ivan Isevich.
Yeah. And he basically urged her to rest.
Yes.
But she didn't want to. This was when she was, you know, pedal to the metal, was just going for it with her work. As I said, sometimes worked 22-hour days. She really was so into her work, and nothing could slow her down. And she didn't want anything to slow. Yes. And I think at first she almost just didn't want to believe it. And so essentially... it's funny because her doctor urged her to rest and she struck him with her handbag.
Yes.
And she actually accused him of trying to sideline her from politics. That's what she thought he was doing at first. But basically, yeah, she wanted to keep going. And her friends started telling her, Eva, like this, you need to go and have this checked out, because she was having abdominal cramps.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
And also vaginal bleeding.
Yes.
Which was becoming very bad. But she still didn't do anything really about it until, I think, mid-1951?
Yes, 51, she got surgery.
Yeah, where they removed her uterus, right?
Yes. And
because, yes, she has uterine cancer.
Yes.
Which also killed Perón's first wife. So it's largely assumed that Perón was a carrier of the HPV virus.
Yes, but the third wife,
didn't get it. Yes. So must have either been immune, or maybe he didn't have the virus. Yes. But yes, so she has uterine cancer, but she still is reluctant to do anything about it. But yeah, in 1951, she has the surgery where her uterus is removed. However, it's too late. The cancer has metastasized, spread
yes,
around her body. And basically, it's now coming up to presidential elections in 1952. And so, obviously, Evita is a natural choice for the vice presidency. But obviously, as 1951 goes on, it sort of becomes increasingly clear that this is not going to be possible.
Yes.
So, on the 22nd of August, they have what's it called again?
Cabildo Abierto. Open Council.
An open council, which is essentially, I guess you could say, a spontaneous, yeah, it was spontaneous, wasn't it?
Yes, because before we made the revolution of May 1810, that was the time we got our first government as a country, we were having these Cabildo Abierto meetings. The most famous was May 22. So for people, if you tell them here about Cabildo Abierto, we know it's a meeting for settling some stuff related to the government.
Yeah.
So they call this as Cabildo Abierto for kind of establishing who were going to run for the presidency, or trying to make the people feel that they were making a choice.
Yeah, exactly. So they have this open council in Plaza de Mayo in center of Buenos Aires. And Perón is there to speak to the people.
Yes.
Because this is when the nominations, obviously with a lot of influence from the unions, specifically the CGT union, nomination for president and vice president of the Peronist Party. And obviously he is going to run again, but there's the question of vice president.
Yes.
And as he is speaking, the crowd calls out for Evita.
Yes.
They want to see Evita. They want Evita because I think by this point they don't know that she's seriously ill.
No, they didn't because they were the government was trying to hide it.
Right.
She was at the moment she was appearing. She was always helped by someone. She was
yes, because she lost a lot of weight by now.
Yes.
She had had obviously this surgery and. Also chemotherapy, I think. I think she was the first person in Argentina.
Yes, the kind of chemo that was at that time.
Which I think was intravenal.
Yes, in the arm.
Yes, exactly.
And there's an appearance of her that she wasn't able to stand up by herself. So she was like tied in a stick and she was... having her coat covering the stick because she was so weak she wouldn't stand up alone.
Exactly. So she obviously didn't plan on speaking, but the crowd becomes quite rowdy and are demanding that she comes to the balcony to speak. Basically, they are calling out for her and she initially doesn't want to, but they call out for her and she comes to speak at the microphone to all the people gathered in the square. And they are basically encouraging her to take the nomination.
Yes.
And she tries, I think, for a very long time, and she's straining to speak. Her voice is very strained. You know, speaking to that many people is probably very stressful. And, you know, by this point, I think she was 37 kilos. So she was very, very weak, and she had to be supported by her husband.
Yes.
And so... she's saying no. Perón is going to lead you, lead Argentina to greatness. Just keep Perón with you.
Yes.
Still not alluding to the fact that she is very, very ill, but saying you need Perón. It's all everything I've done is
because of Perón. Because of Perón.
Yeah, exactly. But they basically the crowd doesn't really take no for an answer, and they say no. Evita, like no, we want you to be vice president.
Because it was She at the when you see the old films from that time, it's a kind of hysteria of the people for seeing her, for hearing her. Is that the myth was born, and the people they were trying to see to get nearby her. It was very hysterical, everything in there, and you know when. People they gather, they turn into a mass.
Exactly. No, but and also, but Evita was really good at connecting to the emotions of a crowd, and that's what she was good at right until the very end.
Yes.
And so she accepts. She says, basically, if this is your will, I will accept. Basically, she's trying to say she had tried to say this title is just an honor, which I don't need. I'm happy to be the wife of the president. Yes. That's enough for me. And the love of my Des Camisados, that's enough for me.
Yes.
But they are not taking no for an answer, so she accepts. So that was on the 22nd. In the days following, her health rapidly declines.
Yes.
She can barely walk. And she is then forced to renounce the vice presidency on the 31st.
Yes.
And she broadcasts a speech, which has sort of also become quite... It's known as the renunciation, which sounds quite biblical, really. Yes. And I think it is really for Peronists, really.
It was a huge paranoia around that because people couldn't stand the fact that she was dying.
Yes, exactly. And so she goes on air and she says, "Compañeros, I want to tell the people of Argentina my definitive and irrevocable decision to decline the honor that the workers and the people of my country wish to honor me with at the historic Cabildo Abierto on August the 22nd. It was the same wonderful evening which my eyes and my heart will never forget that I realized I should not change my place in the fight for the Peronist government by taking up any other position." And she goes on to say, "I did not have then, nor do I have right now, more than one ambition, only one great personal ambition, that my people may say, when this wonderful chapter of history is written and surely dedicated to Perón, that at the side of Perón, there was a woman who was dedicated to bringing to the president the hopes of the people, hopes which later Perón would convert into beautiful realities. And this woman, the people lovingly called Evita, nothing more than this, Evita. So that was the renunciation.
Yes.
So she basically declines the honor of being vice president. And this is obviously because she is now terminally ill, and she knows by this point that she's going to die. And do the public know?
Yes, some of them. They knew that she was ill.
But not quite not as ill as she was.
As ill and what she was having.
Oh, so they didn't know that she had cancer?
No.
Okay, right.
Yes, that's something that most of the people, they didn't know. And it was quite a surprise for many, many people, because as there was no television, no social media, a lot of people, they were having news only by newspapers or maybe the radio. It was not so usual to see her.
Yes, exactly. So she only has a couple more public outings. She speaks on 17th of October, 1951, which is obviously sort of celebrating. What do people call it?
The day of the Peronismo.
Yeah.
Yes, it has different names.
Yeah, so she is on the balcony of the Casa Rosada, the presidential palace, and speaking there, saying, "Everything I've done for you, my descomisados. I love you. I will always have you in my heart." And by this point, she really looks like she is about to die. She's very, very pale, drawn, and again, having to be held up. And then her health continues to decline. And then she gives her final speech, I think, on the 1st of May, 1952. And then you have the presidential election. When is the election?
The elections were in the middle between that speech and the death of her.
Oh, okay. So she basically, her... Really, the last thing that she does is she gets up from essentially what was her deathbed, when her husband, because her husband is re-elected, so Perón is re-elected in the 1952 election, and she actually votes in her
bed.
Yeah, from her bed, yes. Right? Someone has to bring her a ballot box, and because she's so ill. But once he is re-elected, she basically summons what energy she has left.
Yes.
She dons a big fur coat and goes out into a car with Perón.
That's the moment when she's tied to a stick.
Yes. Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. So basically they have to tie a stick to her back to hold her up.
Yes.
Because she can't stand up otherwise. So she rides with him in an open car through the streets of Buenos Aires, celebrating.
Cadillac.
Yeah, a Cadillac, and celebrating that he has been re-elected president. But I think this really drained her. Because then she dies...
July 26th.
On the 26th of July.
2025. That's the time.
Exactly. So at the 25 past 8, there is a broadcast saying Evita, the spiritual leader of the nation, has passed into immortality.
Yes.
Which I think says a lot about how obviously she probably wanted to be remembered.
Yes.
And her as a cult figure, I suppose. So she basically is immediately then embalmed.
Yes.
Which was her wish, I think.
Oh, we don't know for sure.
Okay.
Because
either her or Perón's.
I think it was Perón's
wish,
not her mother's. But we don't know what she really wanted. She was, they were making the Altar de la Patria. That's the name of a kind of monument they were going to build in front of where the Perón's residence was. Nowadays we have in that place the National Library.
Yeah.
And it was going to be a huge monument of Eva and everything related with the Peronismo, and she was going to be buried in there.
Right. But so there were big plans, which she was involved in, wasn't she?
Yes, yes.
So basically, I'm also just going to say some stuff which I forgot to mention, but you can then put this slightly earlier before all of the stuff that we're talking about now. So, yes, she dies at 25 past 8 on the 26th of July, 1952, at the age of just 33.
Yes.
Because of cervical cancer. So, essentially, yeah, she is then embalmed by a Spanish
doctor. Ara.
Ara.
Ara, he was one of the best specialists in that. And
he used quite a sort of pioneering method, didn't he?
Yes.
Where he basically drained her blood. So yes. He basically came to Argentina. He set up his workspace on the second floor of the CG.
Before... at the moment she passed.
Oh, at the president. Yes. Oh, at the Casa Rosada.
No, it was
at the residence.
At the residence, that was at the place we now have the National Library.
Right.
The Unsue residence, and okay. He performed the embalming in there.
Oh, and that was the basic embalming, which yes. was to get her ready for the state funeral.
Yes.
Because obviously, then she gets. Full state honors. There is a yes. huge, huge funeral.
Yes.
And the nation is obviously devastated. And 60,000 people a day go to see her for the last time. And yes. there's images of them passing her coffin. And it's not an open coffin, but it's glass.
It's so, yes, it has like a window.
Yes, a window, which people can then kiss. And people are filing past. And yeah, 60,000 people a day. Come to say their final goodbye to the spiritual leader of the nation. So,
but and here also you have a ditch between people that they were coming because that was their desire, and people that they say it was mandatory to attend the funeral because if they were not, they were going to lose their jobs.
Wow! See, that also again gives kind of. Credence to the narrative that it was almost like a dictatorship, really.
Yes.
Yeah, national mourning is declared.
Yes.
And I think her lying in state lasts for 2 weeks. And so, yeah, it was embalmed and it was exhibited at the CGT.
Yes. She was, the funeral happened in two parts. One at the place where the Council of the City works, and then into the Congress.
Right.
And at that moment, the doctor Ara said that he had to perform a maintenance of the body.
Yeah.
So they took her into the second floor of the CGT, where he performed the maintenance of the body.
Right.
And it was exposed in there, and every certain amount of time, he was performing a maintenance.
Right. Okay.
It was like changing the oil in a car.
Yeah.
A maintenance has to be done.
And why was it in the CGT? I mean, obviously because throughout her life
she was the queen of the workers.
Yes, exactly. And she did a lot for the unions.
Yes, and she was in there waiting for her place in the Altar de la Patria that mm-hmm. was never built.
Right. Exactly. So, given a huge, state funeral, the nation is devastated. However, it also has political consequences for Perón.
Yes.
Because after this, he starts to lose popularity.
Yes, his fellow comrades, they didn't like the way Perón was turning with Eva as a new leader, and now... Perón wasn't having the leg that Eva was providing for the Peronismo.
Exactly, exactly.
So he was in a weak position.
Yes. Cool. Okay, well, Mercedes, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a really, really, really...
Thank you
really,
for, for inviting me.
No problem. It's been really, really, really fascinating speaking with you. It's been a really, really, really interesting topic. Eva Perón is a very interesting person, and I'm definitely going to go and watch that series, Santa Evita. It sounds very interesting. And yeah, I really recommend everyone listening to go and read up about her. She's a very, very interesting person. And yes, as we've said, there it's very divided here in Argentina about her. But what you need to remember is that she was, you know, she was a human being. You know, she did amazing things, but she also made mistakes.
Yes.
She made enemies. She made people not like her. And this obviously then gave rise to, you know, a negative narrative about her. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of being human, really.
Yes.
So that's what you've got to remember. So, cool. Well, thank you very much, Mercedes. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Art.
No problem at all. And guys, thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you next time. Goodbye. Hi guys, just a quick heads up. This episode was shortened to fit within the time limit. If you'd like to catch the full length version and even watch the video, head over to the History Buff Patreon page. Your support means the world to me. Until next time, take care and stay tuned for more exclusive content on Patreon. Cheers.